When preparing sermons, it's wise to keep in mind the possibility of non-Christians being in attendance. That's the key sentence for our SermonCoach.com podcast for today. We welcome you. I'm your host, Dean Wilson. We're talking, as we always do, with Dr. David Maines, the Executive Director of SermonCoach.com. It's our desire to help pastors create effective, life-transforming sermons, life-transforming services, and life-transforming churches. David, you've explained to me the Jenkin Brothers factor, but I'm sure our listeners don't know what that is. Will you explain the Jenkin Brothers factor?
I'm sure they don't know. There would be no way they would know. I went to church and this lady came. I was not the preacher. I was just attending the service. They sat right behind me. Actually, it was the Jenkin Brothers and one of the girlfriends. The Jenkin Brothers hadn't been in church for years and years. And this lady, who's a really fine lady, she had prayed for them because they're her sons. She wanted me to meet them. I kind of observed what went on during the service. One of the brothers was pretty sleepy. His head was bobbing during the time, and the other brother seemed to be more attentive. I thought to myself, this is such a huge thing to this mom, that her two boys that were there, they're probably in their 30s, maybe the older one in his early 40s, and his, I'm assuming, girlfriend was there. I had met one of the brothers before, and I called him by name and the other brother. But as soon as I saw them, I knew they were visiting. One of them, in fact, came from overseas, and I, in my mind, was thinking, what are they thinking of this service? This is like a different world to them, and I'm just kind of curious. And talking with the one brother and with the woman who was with him, the more I was aware how totally different this was to them. I was thinking, as I was just involved in the service, you know, I know what this is meaning to me, but what does it mean to the Jenkins brothers? And I'm thinking there are Jenkins brothers who visit churches every so often, you know. How are we communicating with them? It just was a very interesting morning to me. It was not a normal morning for me. I bring visitors a lot, but most of the time they're Christian people who come from somewhere else. A number of times I would say non-Christians have come with me and made me very aware of what's going on from their perspective. But this was from the perspective of a mother who dearly cared for these two men, and on top of that had the one girlfriend who was coming, and just watching them and knowing they were there because the mother had said, this is very important to me, all of her prayers that has gone on, it just put a whole different dimension in terms of the service as far as me responding to it.
Does this mean that every sermon should have an evangelism appeal?
I don't think it would have. I think an evangelism appeal would have been the last thing those guys would have responded to. I think that every service should have some kind of an appeal, even to an outsider. How do I talk about this? I came and preached maybe 3 years ago to your church, and I preached on, it'd be even more longer ago than that, I preached on the beauty of a clear conscience. Now, that sermon would have related to those guys, because the conscience is something that even the secular society talks about. A lot of stories, a lot of movies relate to the conscience. The good guy, the bad guy saying, do it, don't do it, don't do it. That sermon had no touch of evangelism whatsoever to it, but it would have been a sermon that I think would have caught their attention. Other sermons I've preached would not have caught their attention. But no, it doesn't mean that it has to be evangelism. In fact, I think sometimes the best approach to the person who hasn't been in church for a long, long time or never is not an evangelism approach. It's almost too overwhelming, and it gives them the sense that just as I thought, they're trying to convert me. So I thought that the service was fine. You know, it would have been better if those guys had gotten some sleep ahead of time. In fact, one of them commented how they had been up very late the night before. But they had come, and I said, you know, whether it was late or not, the fact that you came here is very important. And I'm so glad you did it just for your mom. I think that was wonderful, and I commend you. Don't have any negative feelings whatsoever. You were here, and that was big to her. So good for you.
Seems to me this Jenkins brother factor could apply to all parts of the service, not just the sermon.
It does. There are certain things that I've watched over the years and kind of spook people to the person who's not used to it. So I got to the place when I brought visitors, not necessarily non-Christians, but visitors, I would take them out to breakfast or just to coffee or something ahead of time and say, certain things are going to happen. For example, they'll take an offering. Now, you're not expected to put anything in. So when it comes, a lot of people don't put anything in, you just pass it by. But that's a troubling spot for people because they feel guilty. They feel like an outsider. I've often said to them, as far as the songs, you're going to hear songs you've never heard before in your whole life. And my advice to you is don't try to sing them, because anytime you try to sing a new song, I don't care what it is and you never heard it before, it's no good. So I would say just listen to the songs. You can follow the words because they're in the bulletin. That's a helpful tool. Probably the biggest bugaboo for you is going to be at the end of the service, they have what they call the Lord's table. And in our given situation, we all go up to the front, but it'll take you by surprise and you wonder, what are they doing? Here's what's happening. Then I explain about the bread and the wine. I say, you have an option. You can just stay at your seat. It's not a problem. There'll be other people who will do that. If you want to go up, you can do that and you can take the elements. If you want to, you can cross your hands like this. And the person serving, there are many people serving because it's a large church, but we'll just say a short prayer for you if that's the way you'd like. Whatever you'd like, but don't feel embarrassed and don't feel like you're missing something. And if you do go up, this is how you hold your hands. You have an option of taking a small cup that is grape juice, or if you want to, it's a common cup that is wine, and you just take a sip out of it. They wipe it off each time. So I've explained everything, and I've tried to take the mystery out of the service. People have said to me, well, those non-Christians should not go up and participate. And I've said to them, you know what? They're investigating, and sometimes one of the most beautiful things in the world is for them to go and see what it's like to receive the elements. And I don't think God's going to strike them dead for doing that. If I was totally honest, I would say, don't dare go up and touch that, because if you do it unworthily, they're not doing it unworthily. They're coming as visitors. They can participate any way they want, as far as I'm concerned, as long as they have some kind of an understanding of what is going on. And I've had people say to me, when I went up there and I had them put that bread in my hands and I put it in my mouth and then I drank the cup, that was very meaningful to me. And I think, praise the Lord, you know, fine, come back and do it again. Maybe the next time they'll come and go to one of the prayer stations. I don't try to dictate what the Holy Spirit prompts them to do. I just try to give them as much information as I can. And the Jenkins brothers that morning, they didn't go to the front. When I came back, I kind of said hi to them. And again, even while the service was going, because it takes a while for everybody to go through and be served, I was just trying to make them comfortable. That's fine. So, but I do find that the biggest problem, and this will relate to you, Dean, is that people don't like to be surprised. And they don't like to come and they only got a $10 bill in their wallet and they don't know whether to put that in or not. You know, they just need to feel comfortable. And the more you can walk it through, and you can't do that easily if you meet them for church and you just have time when you're walking in. So I always say, you know, why don't we go for coffee? I'll give you a rundown of what's going on, tell you what you don't want to do and what you do want to do, and you ask your questions so you'll feel comfortable, okay? I remember once when I was early in ministry, there was a nun, a Roman Catholic nun who came to our services in the city, and she enjoyed it and we enjoyed her. She was living in a convent, but she would come and visit with us and very friendly. And I took her to a White Sox game once. And I explained to her all how you keep the rules and everything, and how you get a run and, you know, how many outs there are and how you have to catch it. And so we took this nun with us to the White Sox ball game. She was absolutely overwhelmed. She said, they throw it and it lands right in their hand. She says, it's amazing. They hit it and they seem to catch it wherever they are and they can throw it right where they want to throw it. You know, and the White Sox actually won the game, which was unusual. And so she had a blast. But it was much better for her that she at least understood a little bit about the game, because she knew absolutely nothing about it. It was better to explain it to her. Well, I feel the same way about church. You know, you might as well explain as much as you can to help people. So that's what, when people first heard you say it, that's the Jenkins brother effect as far as the Maines family is concerned, okay?
One of the things that I've struggled with and pushed very hard for in the places where I've worked on communications in churches is to make the bulletins as friendly as possible, the order of worship. A lot of that has to do with explaining what's happening. We put little small print notes after certain things to help people understand. We get so used to going through the liturgy of our service that we forget that it's all different and all new. It also helps to have a worship leader who understands the need of people to understand what's happening. And the worship leader can be very helpful. One of the things our particular worship leader does very well is if he's going to introduce a hymn that the congregation hasn't sung before, our announcement time precedes the beginning of the worship service. During that time, he does a segment he calls Fun with Hymns. And what he'll do is he'll teach the new hymn and he'll have the congregation sing it. And he'll talk a little bit about the hymn. It only takes a couple of minutes for him to do it because he's very skilled. But the entire congregation feels comfortable with this new hymn. Plus, anybody visiting recognizes right away that all of the people that are here, they don't know every hymn that's in that hymn book. And that kind of help that we provide people that are visiting is very, very important. Mm-hmm. When preparing sermons, it's wise to keep in mind the possibility of non-Christians being in attendance. We're very glad you joined us for our SermonCoach.com podcast today. You found it on our website, SermonCoach.com. That's sermon-coach.com. We also have resources on our website that we invite you to use to make your ministry even more effective. And we invite you to join us for our next SermonCoach.com podcast.